chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make to heaven in the middle of it. Rest make to heaven in the middle. We are rest make to heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off the program with a very insightful 4.5 minutes with Greg Rees talking about the power structure, Satanism, over the civilizations and how man has been manipulated and used. So here we go with Greg Rees.
As we've discussed recently, the word occult means hidden, and the dark satanic occult, which has been ruling over humanity, maintains its power by hiding knowledge from the public. This hidden knowledge can be described as natural law or universal law, inescapable laws of reality that affect each and every one of us from moment to moment. They have been hidden from the public as a means of keeping humanity ignorant and thereby controllable and ultimately enslaved. So long as we remain ignorant of them, mankind will never be free. The etymology of the word apocalypse reveals its occulted meaning, which is to uncover or reveal something that was hidden. One can argue that the apocalypse already happened, and that we are now living in the post-apocalyptic world. In 1928, Manly P. Hall published The Secret Teachings of All Ages, a comprehensive introduction to all of this occulted knowledge which has been used to manipulate the ignorant masses of humanity for millennia. And while many people choose to educate themselves, many others have chosen to remain ignorant. Ignorance is not bliss. It is the reason why humanity continues to fall deeper into bondage. These laws are fairly simple, and they can be found in every culture on earth. In the Hermetic Sciences, revealed to the public in 1908, we have 7 laws. The first 3, mentalism, correspondence, and vibration, teach us how everything is connected, that everything begins with our thoughts, and that everything in this reality is a frequency. You could say that we are all living within the mind of God, and our thoughts matter. The principle of polarity teaches us that things which appear to be opposites are actually related. Love and hate are merely polar opposites of the same thing. And knowing this makes it easier for us to transform our hate into love. It allows us to turn a negative into a positive. The principle of rhythm teaches that everything in nature has its rhythm. The measure of the swing to the right is equal to the measure of the swing to the left. This allows us to better navigate the waves of reality. The principle of cause and effect may be the most important to understand. Each and every one of our thoughts and corresponding actions in this life has an inescapable effect on everything around us. And the principle of gender teaches us that there are only 2 genders, and that everything in this reality has its masculine and feminine aspects. One could argue that the apocalypse happened thousands of years ago with the 10 Commandments, the laws of how to liberate oneself from the land of slavery. These natural laws were taught in the East by the Buddha, who taught us of right action. And these natural laws were perhaps most eloquently simplified in the teachings of Christ with the golden rule: in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. Do not take another person's life. Do not assault or rape another person. Do not steal another person's property, and do not trespass upon them in any way. Do not coerce or manipulate another person. In the most simple terms, do not steal anything from anyone. Live and let live. This is the path to freedom. And you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Each and every one of us is affecting this reality with every thought and every action. And if we choose to remain ignorant of this, then we are choosing to be sheep, and we will always be enslaved. Understanding these natural laws and treating others with love and respect is the only way to true freedom. Today's politics is nothing other than fighting for your favorite prison guard. Prison guards who will ultimately coerce you and trespass against you. True freedom comes from our actions, because a society of ignorant and belligerent sheep deserve to be in prison, and that will never change. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
For centuries, this ruling occult has been into pedophilia, and just a recent expose was opened up by David Icke. So here's a couple of minutes of his exposing the latest arrest and so forth in the pedophilia area.
A total of 11 people have been accused of being members of a pedophile ring. The group is alleged to have been abuse children in Glasgow over the course of 10 years, and it's claimed members of the group raped and abused three other children, young children. Glasgow High Court heard the children were forced to take part in witchcraft too. And again, if you can squeeze people's sense of the possible, you can do all this stuff and people will just deny that it could possibly be happening. But it is happening, and it's happening on a fantastic scale. Last night, just flicking through YouTube, I came across this video of this young girl from 1989 in a documentary by the 60 Minutes program out of Australia had her describing what she experienced. It was utterly horrific. And if people saw that for the first time, they'd say, oh, come on, that's got to be made up. But I've heard it all over the world over and over and over and over again from endless, endless different people, walks of life, the lot. It's happening. And it, on one level, helps you to grasp the scale of evil that we're dealing with. I mean, if you can do this to kids, what scruples could you possibly have left not to cause mayhem, suffering, etc., death and destruction to the world in general? It's the same mentality. And if we wake up to it, we might grasp a bit more that just because we wouldn't do it doesn't mean they wouldn't. So we'll see where this case goes. It's just horrific reading what is alleged to have happened. But like I say, I've heard it so many times before. This is real.
Well, that's what's happening, in England right now. David Icke has been a premier, reporter and inquirer about what's going on like this, and in many fields and many levels. But coming up next week, we're going to be keeping our ear to the ground at Davos, Switzerland, and we'll be watching and listening to many of the exposés and about different items and topics about of world interest, I should say. And it's the annual World Economic Forum that's held annually during the month of January at Davos, Switzerland. And Dan Dix is going to give us just a little bit of preview about who's going to be there. And he's a reporter, Press for Truth out of Canada. And Dan Dix has been a stand-up guy all the time. And anyway, this World Economic Forum is putting out this reset idea. And they're using this health tyranny, totalitarian health tyranny, and so forth to put it across. And the change of economics. The banking industry is really in trouble. The derivatives markets and the debt that has been taken on is expressing a lot of risk and dangers. And so I believe and others believe that this reset idea is to cover the problem that the bankers and the financial system is in. But anyway, this is Dan Dix talking a little bit about who's going to be there, and they're the most big shot powers in the world. And from about 1,500 organizations and corporations. So here we go, what Dan Dix report.
This is Dan Dix here reporting for Press for Truth with breaking news. The World Economic Forum is set to hold their annual meeting next week in Davos, Switzerland, and a very telling attendees list has just been leaked. The list includes the likes of the FBI director, Chris Wray, the CEOs of Amazon, BlackRock, and Pfizer, top officials at the Gates Foundation and in the Soros Network, and the publisher of the New York Times, to name a few. That's some powerful and influential people right there. You know, it reminds me of the annual Bilderberg conference that I've been covering since 2006, where they also host some of the world's most powerful and influential people to have a private meeting behind closed doors. Well, my friends, Davos is now starting to look like Bilderberg on steroids. Davos is set to host leaders and CEOs amid weighty global issues. Really? So, what kind of issues are they going to be discussing at this private, off-the-record meeting, you might be asking? Oh, just the fact that the World Bank is now warning that the global economy is perilously close to recession in 2023. And they're not the only ones. Recession is likely to bump inflation out of the driver's seat for the economy, so investors should brace for uncertainty, according to this top economist. Meanwhile, you got the former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers saying, more people must lose jobs to fight inflation. He's bravely stating this from a tropical beach resort surrounded by palm trees. And while all of this is going on, ladies and gentlemen, the precious metals space, like gold and silver, has been incredibly resilient. As we see here, gold is now trading near an 8-month high, and analysts expect its rise to continue. So we're going to talk about all of that and much more in this video, guys. But before we do, I got to say, I have a feeling that most of the viewers watching this right now can feel and sense exactly what's coming. You're noticing the price of groceries at the grocery store continuing to rise. And in fact, that's going to continue to go up by around 8% in 2023. And you're seeing your purchasing power go down while all the trends are pointing towards this inevitable global recession. And I know that you know that historically, in times like these, gold and silver have always fared better than the rest. It's an excellent hedge in times of trouble, like what we're seeing coming down the pike. And that's why I wanted to tell you guys about my friends at Patriot Gold Group. Guys, when you call the number on the screen, you'll get connected to a free investor's guide. Someone who's going to help you set up a plan moving forward into 2023. And what these guys specialize in is IRAs and 401ks that are backed by precious metals, like gold and silver. It's absolutely awesome. And even if you already have an existing IRA, that's okay. These guys will roll it over for you. Again, when you call the number on the screen during business hours, you're going to get connected to a live consultant. This isn't some AI robot. This is a real live person who's going to help you set up a plan moving forward. And these guys are top notch when it comes to customer care. They've won the 6 years in a row Consumer Affairs for the best IRA gold dealer. Again, top notch customer service. I wouldn't be pointing you in their direction if they weren't, guys. And the number on the screen is actually a preferred number for Press for Truth viewers. So again, when you call that number during business hours, you're not only taking the right steps to help yourself moving forward and making all the right moves, before this coming global recession, potentially in 2023, but you're also helping me in the field of alternative media. So it's truly a win-win situation, guys. Please take some time today to call the number on the screen or click the top link in the description below. Tell them Press for Truth sent you, and you'll get that preferred treatment. So once again, don't delay, guys. Call that number on the screen or click the link in the description below to get yourself set up for what we know is coming very soon down the pike. All right, guys, let's start with this clip from the former Treasury Secretary, Larry Summers, who says that more people need to lose their jobs in order to fight inflation. Check this out.
I've been speaking in a different way about the Fed in the last couple of months than I had been before, and that's because, for whatever reason, they have come around to views quite close to mine. They think inflation is the primary concern. They explicitly recognize that there's going to need to be increases in unemployment to contain inflation.
What a piece of work that guy is. Completely oblivious to the contrast of the cruelty of that policy and the luxury of his lifestyle. I confronted this tool to his face about discussing the global economy behind closed doors at the Bilderberg meeting. Just watch him squirm.
Mr. Summers, will you be discussing the economy?
No comment.
Why? I've been asking people for 11 years, sir, and I always get the same answer.
No comment. Well, we want to end some of the theories out there. There's a lot of speculation and mystery.
Yeah, people end up speculating because of the no comment comment. And if there was a little more transparency, there might not be all the conspiracy theories.
No comment. Pro-Trump or anti-Trump?
It's not your first time at Bilderberg, correct?
Can you help us understand why there's such a mystique or mystery or secrecy about it?
No comment.
Or the reason for it?
Sir, it's just obviously when there's financial leaders and heads of media and military men, politicians, prime ministers, presidents, very influential people meeting in secret, it's cause for concern, sir.
I'd appreciate your leaving me alone. I could get something for you if you need something. You sure? Would you like a water?
Last time, Peter Sutherland of Goldman Sachs actually gave us quite the conversation. He spoke with us for about 15 minutes. Oh, well, your silence is kind of louder than a no comment comment. Okay, sir, we'll leave it at that.
One last time, I can get you anything you want.
You can clear the air. You know, one statement could clear up a lot of speculation. All right, secretive it is. Take care, sir.
That was in 2017. So fast forward now, and the World Economic Forum is hosting an even crazier event in Davos, Switzerland, just next week. Check this out. Exclusive. The dossier acquires confidential Davos attendees list. The dossier has acquired a confidential list of every individual, excluding some government officials, who will be in attendance for the World Economic Forum's annual summit in Davos, Switzerland next week. The attendees list is a massive roster of some of the most influential and diabolical forces in the corporate, governmental, and nonprofit world. From the United States, this includes the likes of FBI Director Chris Wray, the CEOs of Amazon, BlackRock, and Pfizer, top officials at the Gates Foundation and in the Soros Network, and the publisher of the New York Times, to name a few. The World Economic Forum, through its annual Davos Conference, acts as the go-to in-person, invite-only, closed-to-ideological-outsiders policy and ideas shop for the global ruling class. The World Economic Forum is a fanatical political organization masquerading as a neutral entity with specific policy goals that involve centralizing power into the possession of hand-picked global elites as the only means to save the Earth from a claimed climate emergency. The WEF is the chief coalition builder for what amounts to a public-private fascist movement. Over the years, they've partnered with the most influential individuals in business, along with central bankers, governmental head honchos, and international organizations in order to facilitate their top-down vision for technocratic tyranny, or what they call stakeholder capitalism. The WEF seeks to deliberately roll back human progress, innovation, and personal flourishing under the guise of saving the planet from a so-called climate emergency. For the past several weeks, the dossier has been dedicating significant resources to reporting on the ins and outs of the upcoming Davos conference. As a matter of public interest and legitimate journalistic reporting, the dossier is publishing the entire document below, which we modified with the necessary redactions to protect personal information. Thank you to the anonymous sleuths who assisted the dossier in uncovering these documents. And indeed, thank you to these sleuths who have uncovered this document. I will include a link to this document that reveals the very secretive attendees list to the upcoming WEF annual meeting. But we already know what their number one issue is to be discussing moving forward into 2023. It's going to be all about how to deal with the coming engineered global recession. According to Forbes, the global economy could face a recession and one of the weakest paces of growth on record in 2023, according to annual projections released Tuesday by the World Bank Group, following a year of accelerated inflation, worsening financial conditions, and Russia's invasion of Ukraine. You know, they really got to stop saying Russia's invasion of Ukraine, because there's so many factors at play here when it comes to that, you know, war that's been... tensions have been brewing over decades. Guys, if you haven't seen it, be sure to check out my video, The Truth About Russian Aggression in Ukraine. I'll include a link in the description below. The World Bank, a U.S.-based organization that provides loans and grants to various countries pursuing capital projects, warned the global economy is perilously close to falling into recession in its annual Global Economic Prospects Report Tuesday. Forecasts for global growth in 2023 were cut nearly in half, dropping from 3% to 1.7%, the third weakest pace of growth ever projected by the organization, behind paces recorded during the 2009 and 2020 recession. And as I said earlier, guys, they are not the only ones warning about what's coming. Recession is likely to take the place of inflation as the driver of the global economy this year. And that means investors face more uncertainty about what could happen, according to this top economist. Markets are bracing for an imminent economic downturn after a stream of warnings from Wall Street analysts, while the International Monetary Fund has said it expects a recession to hit one-third of the world this year. So, it's not looking good, my friends. The powers that ought not be are manufacturing a global recession right now. And if you don't take the right steps to stay ahead, you're going to get completely wrecked when they pull the trigger. Again, this is why it's so important that you take matters into your own hands by securing whatever money you do have so that it doesn't become completely worthless. All the warning signs are in, my friends. And it's time to act. Please, guys, don't forget to check out my friends at Patriot Gold Group. Again, by calling the number on the screen or checking the link in the description below. And I think when you do that, you make the right move, you're going to look back to this time in January from when you made all the right moves to protect yourself against what we all know is coming. And you're going to be very, very thankful that you did the right thing to get out of harm's way. So be sure to call that number on the screen, guys, or click the link in the description below to be sure you make all the right moves, as I said, for what we know is coming, the inevitable global recession in 2023. That's all for today, guys. I want to thank you so much once again for tuning in. Please click that thumbs up button and share this video with your friends and family who you think need to see it the most. And stay tuned. We're going to have more video reports coming very soon. This is Dan Dix reporting for Press for Truth.
Next, we have a series of reporting. What's happened recently is that Joe Biden had a a center at Pennsylvania, University of Pennsylvania. It was a Biden center for studying foreign relations and so forth. And up to about $42 million was given to build up that center and to the university. And so over the years, the donors were anonymous, in fact. So just recently, in the last few weeks, there's been classified information and material documents found there and in Biden's home, in his garage, and in a room, I think, next to the garage, there was some additional classified documents. So it set off a virtual firestorm. And so we're going to go with a few clips here. We're going to start off with Andy McCarthy talking about the politics of it, and then we'll get into a little bit more of the dark money that was generated at the University of Pennsylvania at this Biden Center. So anyway, we're going to start off here with Andy McCarthy and what he thinks about somewhat of the politics of this situation now. Here we go with Andy McCarthy.
So does Andy McCarthy, because all this week we've been picking his fine legal brain to figure where this goes. He's a former U.S. assistant U.S. attorney, a Fox News contributor. Andy, just the uniqueness of this is startling. Two special counsels concurrently investigating presidents, one a former one, the other a present one. That never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah, well, I think the first one, Neil, was really a political decision by Merrick Garland. And as Chairman Comer just said, it kind of forced his hand on the second one, which is what happens when you play politics. There's really no good reason for the Biden Justice Department to have a special counsel to investigate former President Trump. The conflict of interest that's inherent in the special counsel situation is when the Justice Department has to investigate its own administration, and in particular its own president. But obviously what happened here is Garland and probably Biden expected that Trump was going to be charged in connection with the Mar-a-Lago documents, and they wanted to distance themselves from that decision, or at least project the illusion that they would distance from it. And that was the purpose of having that special counsel. And of course, because they did that, the next domino is if you have an investigation of Biden and you have these explosive revelations, he really didn't have any choice at that point.
Which is more explosive? It's very early on, but what do you think?
You know, I think that it'd be nice if we took a step back and recognized that in this constitutional system, the president is supposed to be checked primarily by the Congress. The president is not supposed to be checked by prosecutors who work for the president. These are executive branch officials, no matter whether you call them special or independent or what have you. So what I fear, Neil, is that they're now going to say that because there's a special counsel on this, everything should go dark. If Congress asks any questions, they're going to be accused of obstructing the special counsel's investigation. And that's really not the way it's supposed to work. Congress is supposed to be the primary vehicle for checking abuse and misconduct by the executive branch.
You know what's weird, though, is how this is discovered. And I know in all the cases that have come to date so far, it's not the National Archives that has revealed, hey, we're missing some important documents. And that's what kind of surprises me. And I don't know what the procedure is, but I've always ventured to think, can't we have it like a library system? You take out a book, you got to return the book. The librarian knows if you have the book. And it, they're like the librarian in my hometown. She will track you down and get to your home. Isn't there a procedure like this with these valuable documents that National Archives would know, oh, we're missing this on Libya, we're missing this on Ukraine or this on China, and then say, well, where the hell is it?
Boy, that's such a great point, because we have so much better technical capability today than when you and I were kids to, like, track these things down, right? So you think we would be using that. The reason I think it goes in the other direction is frightening, and that is that there's way too much information in the government that's classified. And then the other thing that we don't talk about nearly enough is that there's about 5 million or more people in the United States who have security clearances.
Wow.
Which means, like, our, you know, the crown jewels, whatever they are all over the place and dispersed and diffused, and, you know, they end up in garages and it's, you know, it's a very insecure situation.
I'm telling you, and my librarian would find these people, all 5 million of them. But we'll see. It's wild. It's just wild to me that we don't have a better system in place. Andy McCarthy, always learn a lot. Thank you, my friend. Thank you very much.
The other networks are finally joining in on this. ABC News is even reporting about these classified documents. And the big problem about this is that President Trump, when they raided him, Mar-a-Lago and so forth, he has authority to hold classified and declassified documents. At the time that these documents showed up with Joe Biden, he had no authority, so he was actually in possession of illegal documents on an illegal basis. Perhaps you could say he stole those out of the archives or whatever. But anyway, this is what ABC had a very, very short report on this week.
With President Biden facing growing questions and new investigations into the classified documents found in his former office and Delaware home.
Yeah, both the president and the White House declined to answer further questions on the special counsel probe into potential mishandling of the files.
Now Republicans in the House are moving to investigate. ABC's White House correspondent Mary Alice Parks is on the North Lawn with the latest. Mary Alice, good morning.
Good morning. The White House increasingly tight-lipped about these classified documents and new investigations as the news of a special counsel sinks in.
This morning, President Biden back at his Delaware home, where a handful of classified documents were found in his garage.
Are you confident you did nothing wrong, Mr. President?
The president leaving the White House, ignoring questions. Silent on the news, a special counsel has been appointed to look into his handling of classified material. House Republicans launching new investigations, demanding answers about what exactly was in those documents found in the president's home. President Biden's press secretary saying the White House does plan to fully cooperate with the newly appointed special counsel.
We have been fully cooperating with the Department of Justice, and now we will be doing the same with the special counsel's office.
But deflecting most questions on the subject.
I would refer you anything that is related to this, as it relates to the review, to the Department of Justice or my colleagues at the White House counsel office.
Attorney General Merrick Garland saying the extraordinary circumstances required the appointment of a special counsel.
This appointment underscores for the public the department's commitment to both independence and accountability.
His pick for the job? A Trump appointee, veteran prosecutor Robert Hur, who in a statement promised to follow the facts swiftly and thoroughly. The move from the Attorney General coming after he said the Department of Justice was notified of classified documents found in November at the Penn Biden Center in Washington, D.C. Then in late December, and again just this last week, President Biden's personal lawyers informing investigators that additional documents had been found at the president's Wilmington residence, most in his garage. The White House counsel's office saying the documents were inadvertently misplaced and that Biden's team quickly responded to the, quote, mistake.
In addition to this probe from the special counsel, the White House is also now facing two House investigations, both led by Republicans in the Oversight and Judiciary Committee. They say they want to know what exactly was in these documents, who had access to them, and who searched the president's home. Whip.
Mary Alice, thank you. Let's bring in ABC News contributor Sarah Isger, a former spokesperson for the Justice Department during the Trump administration. Sarah, good morning to you. It's great to have you. So now that a special counsel has been appointed, what are the next steps in the investigation?
So the Department of Justice is obviously going to look at the statutory definition of this crime. You have to knowingly remove classified information. But they're also going to look at past precedent when the department has brought cases like this. Jim Comey laid out the four factors that would need to be present when he declined to prosecute, bring charges against Hillary Clinton back in 2016. The intentionality of it, whether there were vast amounts of documents. Potential disloyalty to the United States, he said, and finally, evidence of obstruction. And so that will be part of this investigation as well.
And so you touched on this as well. There's still so much we don't know about these documents and how they ended up in Biden's home and office. How could that play a role in the severity of the case?
Well, unlike the Trump Mar-a-Lago search warrant, where that was really a year after he had left the White House, here we have 6 years since these documents were presumably removed. The question will be, obviously, who had access to them? Were the documents moved? But an important one for those factors will be, were those documents accessed at any point in the last 6 years where people knew that there were classified documents in an unsecure location and nevertheless left them there?
And we know their cases are different, but with Biden and Trump now under investigation, it raises the question, is something wrong with the system altogether, and should Americans be concerned about the security of these classified documents?
I mean, here we are talking about the current president, the former Secretary of State, all who have been investigated for mishandling classified information. It is absolutely egregious at this point that we have high-ranking officials ignoring the law, whether criminally or not, certainly recklessly mishandling some of our nation's top secrets. It's something the national security apparatus is going to really need to think about moving forward.
I'm sure. Sarah Isger, thank you so much for your time this morning. We appreciate it.
This isn't going away. This was an illegal holding of documents in violation of federal law by Joe Biden and his associates. And there's a chain woman floating around that they can't even find. Fox was saying they can't find a photograph of her, and she was in the offices there where these classified documents were at times and had access to all these. Is this another Chinese? And the real problem is that Pennsylvania, they were given up to $42 million in some cases by anonymous givers. Now, we should know who's giving all that money to any institution like that. So here's a short report on 5 more documents, followed by a dark money report. So here we go with a short report about 5 more documents found.
I do want to get back to this breaking news that we are following at this hour. Lawyers for President Biden found more classified documents at his home in Delaware than previously known. The information provided a short time ago here by the White House. The White House lawyer Richard Sauber said in a statement that a total of 6 pages of classified documents were found during a search of Biden's private library. The White House had said previously that only a single page had been found there. The latest disclosure is in addition to the discovery of documents found in December in Biden's garage and in November at his former offices at the Penn Biden Center in Washington from his time as vice president. The apparent mishandling of classified documents and official records from the Obama administration are under investigation by a former U.S. attorney, Robert Hur, who was appointed as a special counsel Thursday by Attorney General Merrick Garland. Sauber said in a statement Saturday that Biden's personal lawyers, who did not have security clearances, stopped their search after finding the first page Wednesday evening. Sauber found the remaining material Thursday as he was facilitating their retrieval by the Department of Justice. He said, quote, "While I was transferring it to the DOJ officials who accompanied me, 5 additional pages with classification markings were discovered among the material with it for a total of 6 pages. The DOJ officials with me immediately took possession of those." So again, lawyers for Joe Biden found more classified documents at his home in Wilmington, Delaware than previously known. The information just provided here by the White House.
We go with more and more documents all the time. The next report was a lengthy report about the dark money aspect of this. So here we go next with that.
Welcome back to Fox and Friends. New reports indicate there's another major player in the Biden document scandal, and it's the Chinese Communist Party. The University of Pennsylvania's Biden Center, where classified documents were found, received more than $30 million from anonymous Chinese donors. Here to tell us why Penn's Biden Center is a dark money nightmare, we're going to bring in National Legal and Policy Center Chairman Peter Flaherty. Peter, thanks for joining us. So we know that the number, the dollar amount accelerated, the money they were getting from China to the UPenn accelerated as the Biden, you know, center, whatever they do, became established at the university. What does this tell you? Why was Penn taking that money, and did they report it properly?
Well, good morning, Rachel.
Colleges and universities around this country receive a lot of foreign money, and UPenn is no different. They've received money from China and Saudi Arabia in the past. What's significant here is that once the Biden Center was established, the gifts accelerated, and much of the money was anonymous, as you pointed out. There was a single $14 million anonymous gift in 2018 from a source in China. The attention that this whole thing is getting now is a great relief to us because we focused on this issue in 2020. We tabulated the amounts of money from Chinese sources, and we filed a complaint with the Department of Education because universities are supposed to disclose any gift over $250,000. And the University of Pennsylvania did not do that. Unfortunately, to our chagrin, the Education Department didn't do anything about it. So we now renew our call for the University of Pennsylvania to disclose who in China gave all this money to the Biden Center.
Absolutely, we should know that. I think they should probably register as foreign agents at this point. But this is what concerns me about the money going to the university, Peter, and tell me if I'm wrong. First of all, we know that it's affecting policy. I think there was a call for the China initiative to disclose a lot of these this funding from foreign and from China specifically. And they said the universities, the Ivy Leagues, including UPenn, said that that was racist. But it's also affecting the curriculum, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but you raise a good point. It looks like the Chinese may have gotten their money's worth. 150 UPenn professors wrote a letter to Merrick Garland last year saying that the China Initiative, which is a law enforcement effort to root out Chinese espionage on American campuses, was racist. And it's really ironic because UPenn itself is very discriminatory when it comes to Asians in their admissions, as are the other Ivy League schools. In fact, that problem is now under review by the Supreme Court. So it could be that these professors know where their bread is buttered. They've never done a letter complaining about the university's admission policies.
Yeah, which are racist in terms of the admission policies are racist, but they sure like those Chinese dollars. This is a very dark web of money between the Bidens, the Biden Foundation, UPenn. We're glad that you're getting the attention that you have been seeking on this finally. We hope you follow it to the very end because I think this is very disturbing.
Yeah, we hope the special prosecutor and the House committees get into it, too. That's our hope now.
Absolutely. Peter Flaherty, thank you.
In addition to the whole scandalous money being given to the University of Pennsylvania, there was the Department of Justice shut down China-focused anti-espionage program. The Chinese initiative is being cast aside largely because of perceptions that it unfairly painted Chinese Americans and U.S. residents of Chinese origin as disloyal. Well, this thing was shut down by the Justice Department, but before that, they gave up to 42 million anonymous donors to Biden, and there are other accusations to the Bidens of other millions being given to the Biden through other companies and so forth. So what we have here is a scandalous on a high level, possibly of espionage and worse, and it must be investigated. And I just hope that we can dip into this and really close down this horrendous, you know, Lee, unfair, you could say, unfair Justice Department that what's going on. We're going to end the program with Randall Carson. He studies lost civilizations and different asteroids having an impact upon the world over millenniums. And he's interviewed by Mike Adams. And so next comes up Mike Adams interviewing Randall Carson, a man of the ages, describing civilizations lost, different impacts of different meteorites and so forth, and how they have changed the world history. So here we go with Mike Adams. We're going to the end of our exit music, and then we'll see you next week. Thank you for listening. Oh, we're going to put a some additional click-offs, and we're going to embed the total Randall Carson interview by Mike Adams. We're only going to have about 10 or 15 minutes of it here towards the end of this program. But we're also going to put up some things to have to do with sub-quantum kinetics. And the man that has pioneered in this is Paul LaViolette. Paul LaViolette. I met him down in Bastrop 1 year, but didn't know who I was meeting, and I didn't know how world famous he really was at the time. But anyway, here we go with Mike Adams and Randall Carson.
Welcome, everyone. This is Mike Adams here, and I'm the founder of Brightown.com, as you probably know, the platform for free speech. And today we have, I think, just an incredible gem of a human being who's all about not just freedom of speech, but freedom to think, the freedom to be. And his name is Randall Carson, and his website is randallcarlson.com. Just an extraordinary individual who has dedicated many years of his life to uncovering the mysteries of human civilization, human history, and even meaning. What does it mean to be human, and where are we going, and how do we survive all of the tribulations that we may face? Mr. Carlson, it's an honor, sir, to have you on. I'm a great fan of your work. I think our listeners are as well. Welcome to this interview.
Well, thanks for having me, Mike, and I just want to reciprocate and say I'm a great fan of yours as well.
Well, I'm humbled to hear that, because I feel like your work is important, and I'm just goofing around most of the time. But you're doing real big things for humanity. Let's talk about that. If people go to your website right now, randallcarlson.com, they see the Cosmic Summit, cosmicsummit2023.com. You're a speaker there. What is all this about? For those who are new to you and your world, what are you talking about in a cosmic summit and comet impacts and things like that? What's the big picture here?
Okay, Cosmic Summit is a conference being organized by my good friend George Howard, and he's a fellow researcher into these areas of ancient history. So this is his first attempt to organize a conference, and he's had some good help, so I think it's going to come together really well this June. And it's going to focus on mostly the catastrophic history of the Earth, with a kind of a special focus on the as it's called, the Younger Dryas, which was a period that lasted from roughly 12,900 years ago to about 11,600 years ago, and was a time of incredible transition, planetary transition. And amongst the things that happened was, prior to the Younger Dryas, planet Earth was in the deep grip of a massive ice age. We had, if you picture North America, try to imagine an ice sheet over all of Canada, reaching from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific, from the northern United States up to the Arctic Circle, at least as big, probably bigger, than the ice sheet that now covers the South Pole of Antarctica.
Wow.
A mile and a half thick over central Canada, extended down into the northern United States. At the same time, because of this extraordinary mass of ice, oh, and I should also mention that it buried northwestern Europe as well. So countries like all of Scandinavia buried under thousands of feet of ice. Because of all this buildup of ice on the land, ocean levels decreased by 400 feet. As ocean levels decrease, the coastlines migrate oceanward, right?
Right.
And expose several million square miles of continental shelf that is now completely drowned. Also, there were enormous numbers of megafaunal species that lived on the Earth at the time. You know, you had the mammoths. Very few people realize, you know, you say elephants and people think Africa or perhaps India. There were actually four species of elephant in North America up until the Younger Dryas, which is pretty amazing when you think about it.
That is.
You know, there was the mastodons, which were a separate, the term for these elephants is proboscideans, meaning they have a long nose, right, the trunk, right? So you had four species of proboscideans. They're all gone, of course. You had ground sloths that were the size of elephants. You had 600-pound beavers. You had giant
saber-toothed tigers.
Yes, saber-tooth. You had the saber-tooth cats. You had the American Pleistocene lion that was the size of a horse. You had the cave bear. You had Arctotus simus, which was the giant short-faced bear who stood 6 feet tall at the shoulders, a massive beast. Standing on his hind legs, he was up to 12 feet tall. So this bestiary goes on and on. So amongst other things that happened during the Younger Dryas was that there were extreme climate changes. The climate of the earth went spasm for about 1,300 years. It went extreme warmth, extreme cold, back and forth several times. During this time, the ice sheets catastrophically melted away. Ocean levels rose very quickly. Over 100 megafaunal species disappeared in the process, were killed off, were exterminated so effectively that they completely failed to perpetuate the species. And to put that into perspective, right now today, now a megafauna is defined as any creature that's over about 44 kilograms in body weight, which is about 100 pounds, right? So if you think today, if you made a list of all the animals on Earth today, let's say mammals that are over 100 pounds in body weight on every continent, depending exactly on how you divide up the species, there's going to be between 100 and 120 species of megafaunal animals today on Earth. That's about the same as the number that went extinct during the Younger Dryas. So in other words, the mortality event was equivalent to essentially wiping out every single animal on Earth over 100 pounds in body weight, which is hard to wrap your head around. But that's how many species did not survive these transitions. There was also the disappearance of the so-called Clovis culture that was quite prolific in unglaciated North America down until the Younger Dryas began at about roughly 12,900 years ago, and then they rapidly disappeared right along with the megafauna. So you had the disappearance of the megafauna. You had this rapid catastrophic melting of the ice sheet, these large pulses of meltwater discharging off the ice sheets, corresponding rapid pulses of sea level rise. You also had climate shifts up to 10 to 12 degrees centigrade, which is up to like 15 to 18 degrees Fahrenheit. And to put it into perspective, since the Industrial Revolution began, the climate of the Earth, if we go back to the end of the Little Ice Age, 1850, 1860, climate of the Earth has warmed about a degree. About a degree.
Right, because you're talking about average temperatures warming by 18 Fahrenheit.
Yes. And sometimes maybe in less than 2 to 3 years.
That's extraordinary. So, a lot of your work and the work of other scientists and colleagues of yours, and I know you've led dozens of expeditions to various regions. And I think on your website, you talk about how you even give tours. People can go with you to some of these sites, which that would be a fascinating experience. But a lot of your work, as I understand it, has been trying to find the common cause or the explanation that makes sense for this. And is that what led you to the Younger Dryas impact theory? Or
yeah,
is that
yes.
one of many theories or just the primary one?
Well, I would call that the primary one. And what that, I've been immersed in reading. I love science. I love history. I love mythology and have since I was a kid. I grew up in rural Minnesota, right at the edge of one of the great glacial lobes that ebbed and flowed right there where I lived. And so it was a very fascinating landscape. Did not understand it, but I certainly was fascinated by, Minnesota is known as the land of 10,000 lakes. It's actually closer to 15. That's where I grew up in Minnesota. And, closer to 15,000. We had property on one of those little lakes, which was just, most of those lakes are remnant meltwater puddles from the great glaciers melting back. But I can still remember my dad telling me that, well, once there was, all of this ice right here, and I remember him showing me a picture in a book. I have no idea what book that was. This was a long time ago. Showing, and it showed the huge glaciers and everything, and it just became very, you know, I became fascinated with that at an early age. Now, I didn't really begin to dive into it as a study until later, you know, like was actually in my mid to late 20s. But I kind of circled back to it because I was very fascinated with mythology and the stories of ancient cultures, legends, folklore, all of that kind of stuff. And I began to discover that, you know, so much, and I'm sure you're aware of this, Mike, that so much of the mythology and folklore of the ages and from around the world is strikingly parallel in a lot of things. And one of the things that really intrigued me was the stories of great catastrophes, whether it was floods, fires. You know, the Norse tradition deals with, you know, Ragnarok, the age of fire and gravel, battles of the gods in the sky, you know, the Greek tales of Phaeton, you know, who fell from the heavens and set the earth on fire, Deucalion and the great floods. You know, there was Utnapishtim and the Sumerian. There was Xisuthros. Of course, there was Noah. And as I'm reading all this, I'm going, you know, how come? And then finding out that Native Americans, tribes almost across the entire continent had legends of these great world-destroying floods in their past history. You know, the Mayans did. You know, I saw the correlation between the Greeks and their four ages of the world, and the Mayans had four ages of the world. And I began to think, well, how is this, you explain this? And that's when I discovered some of the early catastrophist researchers like Emanuel Velikovsky and others. There was quite a few others. Hugh Auk and Klaus Brown was another one. Charles Hapgood was another one. This would have been in about the mid-70s. And so I just got very interested in it. And there was a couple of years that I spent a lot of time hiking and traveling. Summer of 70, I mean, a year out of high school. And I spent most of that summer hiking around the western states, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, Washington. Got very fascinated by the landscapes that I saw, and I can still remember having kind of an epiphany traveling up the Columbia Gorge, which forms the along the Columbia River, forms the border between Washington and Oregon, and seeing these just massive landforms, like these sort of almost delta-like formations splayed out from the mouths of the tributary rivers. And I just remember having this impression that there was just something extraordinary that must have happened to create these landforms, because I just remember how do you explain this, you know? And so it was these kinds of things that just sort of marinated in my mind. And finally, about the late 70s, I really said, I'm going to get down and try to learn about this. So I started reading everything I could on geology and history of, you know, ancient history. And one of the things is when you go back to the 70s and all the way back to the late 1800s, there was a doctrine in geology called uniformitarianism, and it rejected any ideas of catastrophe.
But I want to interject a question here on that, and I'm really glad you brought that up, because what is taught to the mainstream today, and this is implied but never really proven, but it's implied – and it sounds absurd when I'm going to say it here, but it's implied that until the invention of the combustion engine, Earth was calm, peaceful, an eternal spring. There were no hurricanes. There were no storms. There were no floods, catastrophes, nothing. Everything was cool until we started burning, you know, fossil fuels. And then it all went to hell, basically, is what kind of, we're kind of told that story. And it's absurd, because I used to live in Wyoming. I remember sailing along a Yellowstone Lake, I believe, looking at the Grand Tetons, and I'm thinking, this couldn't have happened gradually.
Right.
You know, I mean, look at these sharp peaks. So something thrust them upwards. I mean, that was just an intuitive thought. What do you think?
Well, you know, when you go back to the origins of geology in the first, really right up until a post-Civil War by several decades, almost all the founding fathers of geology were catastrophists, and they were looking at the landscape without any ideological lens. They were just looking, just like you, looking at those mountains, looking at mountains and thinking, yeah, you, because